say four.
All right. This is March 7th, 2024. We are starting the County Board of Education policy meeting. I do want board members to know there has been one policy removed from this month's policy agenda, which is library materials. We're going to do a little bit of tweaking. It will be back in April for first reading. So no worries. We will get next month to discuss it.
Was that on the agenda? Or was...
Do you recall our meeting
last month? Yeah, did we push it? I don't recall last month.
Then you and I will have an offline discussion. How's that?
That's fine.
Too. Okay. So that will be back in April. We've got two on the agenda for tonight for first reading. Both of them are requests made. All the changes are made by requests made by board members. So you're going to see some different color fonts, and that really is to keep me in my head straight. Josh is running a few minutes late, so the report cards and grading systems, y'all remember, is from last month. So let's skip over that till he gets here so he can speak to it. The next one is attendance. So two changes, and then I'm going to probably let Lee or Jay, I don't want to interrupt everybody eating, talk about it. But let me kind of give you an overview. So first change on page 2, you're going to see this in red, because this is a change requested by a board member. Staff doesn't have a recommendation yet. We want to talk through it. We have more questions than anything. So that's why it's in red. That really is for so I can keep it straight, quite honestly. And the board member knew it was going to be in red, so no surprises there. The other piece is on page 4. Which is 14 through 25, non-school sponsored extracurricular activities. This has been at the request of a couple of board members and some parents. This is currently in state law. It's been in state law for years. There's not been any changes in probably long before I came to the district, 10-ish years. But I'm not sure that all of our parents are aware of this. So some of the feedback from board members is, let's put this in the policy. This is almost verbatim from state law. And you'll see the changes, we've added 11 to the TCA code and then moved the attendance hearing. This piece was vetted by staff. We do agree with this. We recommend this change. That's why it's in blue. Do you want to speak? Okay, so Jay's going to speak to page 2, number 10, and kind of, we'll have some questions, Jay.
I'm sure we will. Dana and I have had these discussions over the last 8 years or so, I think we did this at Lee, where were you when we made this attendance policy, when we went to kind of this 8 absences versus the strict number 8 and like unexcused absences versus like, I don't know.
I was at Centennial then.
Okay, because I thought Charles was there.
It's been a minute.
It's been a while. So when we established this policy, and the corollary to this is the... So this determines what absences are excused and what are unexcused. There's a related policy around exam exemptions. There used to be a number of absences, and then we switched it to be more flexible to just no unexcused absences. So we're not editing that. There's no reason to edit that. So then what matters is, okay, well, what's excused? And is it a number of absences or is it a specific? So what we have and I'll let Lee speak to the current policy, but what I want to add is, and the current policy basically has, Lee, tell me, Where is the 8 absences actually? Like, where is that? Is that in policy or is that just an administrative
rule? It's administrative.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So basically, we define what unexcused absences are. They define how many unexcused absences you can have before the only way you can get excused is by a doctor's note or principal approval like that. After that 8, then you kind of go into another realm. So what I want to do is I'll start with the last one first, the non-school sponsored extracurricular activities. This is, and it's on page 4. This is the one that causes, in a lot of spring sports, non-varsity sports, so competition cheer, swimming, lacrosse, rugby, like everybody's having these out-of-town tournaments and state championships, and they have to leave. Right now, it's at, they basically, the principal has to go through and they have to evaluate, do they already have 8 absences or not? And if they, and it's kind of silly, if they have 8 absences, then we approve the excess absences. And if they don't have 8 absences, then we count them towards their 8. Or it might put them over 8, so we count 1 day of the 3. At the end of the day, everybody's approved all the rules. Like, nobody's saying that these absences aren't going to be approved. There's actually state law that says that. And so all I'm doing is codifying this so that, and what I want to do is that these up to 10 absences, and usually it's not 10 at all. It's usually like 2 or 3 or 4, whatever. But up to 10 absences approved under this policy, they're just approved. Okay, so because what I want to talk to Lee about is whether or not we need the number of policy absences anymore, because I don't think we do. So then coming back to the 5, the only thing that I want a number on is up to 5 absences with a note from a parent or guardian that will be deemed excused as long as the student has no unexcused absences. So not without criteria. I know I talked to one of my principals, and she said that another criteria that she had was that they were passing all their classes. I was like, if we want to put more kind of more restrictions on that, so that if we are exercising judgment now, and we can kind of codify what that judgment needs to be to make sure to capture like the bulk of these absences, then that's fine. But the way it works now is because we have a set number of absences that you have, if you're sick the first 2 weeks of school, then you have no more discretionary absences as a parent. Everything that you do can only, you either have to have a doctor's note or you got to go ask the principal. And the principal can do whatever they want. It's at their discretion. They're probably going to say yes, but you just don't know. If you've got a 3-day weekend planned in April, and you miss and you already missed your 8 days, you don't know if they're going to approve it or not. And I just want to. I don't think that's the intent of the rule. And we talked about this. I can remember the conversation. We said, hey, but timing of these 8 days is going to dictate whether or not it's principal discretion, or you just get to have it with a note, and it's just caused some confusion and lack of clarity for parents. And so I just want to say flat away, if your first 5 absences that you have, the parent can sign that are not related to student activities, don't have a doctor's note, parent gets to say, I get 5 get out of jail free cards. If we want a mental health day, I don't, no questions asked. And so if we did this, then I just want to think through whether we need the the administrative thing, even though I know that's separate. So any questions is fine.
And I can kind of speak to like that change. So for, I don't know, a decade or two prior to that change, students, and the whole purpose of having a limit is to encourage kids to be at school. You know, at what point are absences becoming excessive? And for a couple of decades, we had determined 10 absences was that line. After 10 absences, we need some type of official documentation to determine, is this going to be an excused absence or not? The state changed, I guess about 10 years ago, changed their accountability measure and added in chronic absenteeism. And at that time, the district changed and said, let's move that back to 8. That keeps us under the chronic absenteeism piece, and then we'll continue to evaluate case by case after that. With this policy conversation, we've had a lot of conversations about the 8 versus the 10, and we feel comfortable going back administratively outside of a policy change, going back to the way we did it, which worked successfully for a long time. Is after 10 absences, if you continue to be absent, let's have a conversation. If it's medical-based, give a medical note. If you've got a trip that's coming up, that's a big deal for your family, have a conversation with your family or with your principal. If you have a club sport competition, like competition cheer that happens in February and the whole team's going, but you had mono in October and you had to miss several weeks of school, have a conversation with your principal and let's do case by case. Because the opposite sometimes happens, right? A student is out, not for great reason, and then wants to continue to be absent, but not for a great reason. And so those conversations with administration does two things. It keeps them in the loop of what's really going on with this student and their family, what's taking place. It's an opportunity to touch base to that point, like, are you passing your classes? How are things going? And then gives them the opportunity to make that case-by-case discretion. Ultimately, we want kids at school every day. You know, that's the ultimate, but we know that that's not realistic for every single kid every single day. Outside of this change, administratively, we do feel comfortable making that recommendation to change and go back to 10 that works for us, and then having those principal conversations case by case. And then a lot of times we talk about it. You know, competition cheer, a lot of girls travel and boys travel to go compete at that. And so it's a conversation we have as principals. You know, that's those conversations are happening. Be on the lookout for those parent requests. If someone was sick and was over 10, have those conversations. And that particular instance, in my understanding, is all students who were over their amount and came and met with the principal, every one of those kids were excused and able to go on that trip because they had those conversations with the principals. The principals don't feel like that's a burden to have the conversation after 10. They feel like it's an opportunity to continue to touch base with students who are out a lot. Because whether you're out for good reason, like it's a justifiable reason, or you're out for not necessarily a good reason, you're still missing instruction. So it's an opportunity to touch base. How's it going? How are you going to keep up? So you missed that month of school. How did you get caught up when you had mono? Now you're going to be out another week. How are we going to keep you caught up? And just putting a plan in place for those absences to occur. We feel like that's a good practice. So outside of this policy conversation, we feel like that needs to happen and can continue.
And also that you guys you would probably feel this, the timing of that 10th absence makes a big difference on the depth of those conversations, right? If it's happening in late April, you know, it's a lot simpler than if it's happening in October.
Where's the job become truant? When is that? What number is that? Is that a 10 or 7?
It's
an
unexcused.
Unexcused.
It's at 5, and Dana, fill in. Mm-hmm. At 5, we have 5 unexcused. We have an obligation to notify parents that we have to put a plan in place and talk to them. And then if it continues, then that's true.
Right. And that's our tiered. We've got the progressive tiered system. So, and this would not change that. This is really defining what is or is not an excused or unexcused absence. And since I have the floor for just a second, I know we have had a couple people come in late. We skipped the first policy, so we will come back to it. And we had just started talking about attendance probably when most of y'all came in.
And I think the non-school sponsor was really important too, because, you know, it just wasn't fair with the non-school sponsored sports. You know, like volleyball, they can get off and all that. But you're just right. The swim team, lacrosse, it's like it's non-school supported, so therefore you don't get excused. So I think this is really important.
Oh, yeah, we agreed. Yeah. And I think at one point in time, thank you, it was a conversation we had often, even though it wasn't, it's not been in policy, but like I said, it's been the law a long time.
Exactly.
But I'm not sure that that's still a conversation we're having. So that piece definitely makes sense moving forward so that everybody knows what the rules are.
Right.
So, Lee, I've got a question about the parent note, notwithstanding the parent note, but just if we add in these 10 apps, up to 10 absences for student activities, so how would you, because we've had, there are timing issues, you recognize that there are timing issues, and how would you, from a consistency basis, like recognize that if you're sick the first couple of weeks, so you got mono October, you're going to miss, you know, a week over, you know, you're going to miss 4 or 5 days over the course of a couple of months for your activities in the spring. And that's going to put, I mean, you're way over 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I have a day that would have been excused in September. Now I don't know if it's going to be excused in April. Like, to me, putting a limit on it now, I mean, I'd love to have the 5. It just takes, and I get what you're saying about the conversations with the principals. But right now, when you deal with all of those people and those school activities, conflating that with a number of absences too, just makes it seems to make it more complicated and less clear for parents. If it's gonna, I mean, if you don't have the number, the only numbers are up to 10 for your student activities, you've got 5 notes that you can write, and then you're basically, it's got to be something on here, and if you don't have a doctor's note, then you got to get approval from the principal. Like,
well, I like your scenario, because that happened, that and, you know, 150 other scenarios kind of happen. But in that scenario, if you have that trip planned and like, man, that's, we got to really look at our attendance, because we're going to go on this trip or this competition and in February, you're planning ahead. No, I get the flu, I get mono. What I would coach our parents to do, if I were the principal of that building, I'd say, if that happens, reach out to us and say, hey, we were planning on this. Can we talk about it? And then I would say, yeah, let's absolutely talk about it. Let's schedule a plan for that. So let's talk about, first of all, and make sure that Bobby has everything that he needs to, when he comes back, he stays on track as well as he can while he has mono. And then let's get a good, solid plan of how he can progressively get that work made up. And then, yeah, I'm still going to excuse those in the spring. So let's talk about how we can make sure that we stay on top of things until then, get caught up, and then respond again. I do think that the conversation and the back and forth is helpful, and that direct communication about, I'm not going to wait until the spring and worry that whole time and have my kids stressed what's going to happen. I want to go ahead and reach out to my administrator and have the conversation now.
I mean, but how that happens in practice, mm-hmm, is I tell you about it, mm-hmm, and they say, well, we'll talk about it in the spring when it comes closer, after we see like what other, and it just creates uncertainty. So can I plan on it or not?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then you tell me if it's going to be excused or not. And I'm like, I don't really, I'm not asking your permission to go.
Right.
And they leave. And I mean, are you really giving them zeros when they're gone?
We're not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If
it's
you're
really
not, then like, what are we?
Like,
what are we talking about?
Yeah.
Just
excuse versus unexcused.
Yeah.
Right.
Excuse versus unexcused. And I think that depending on the scenario that you give, like in that scenario, it feels like no harm, right? Just let me do it. And other scenarios, we need to make sure that kids are on track and on track to graduate and get the education that they need, and not out for no reason, no good reason to be out. So the communication helps.
So from my perspective, if there are reasons why you wouldn't allow a discretionary note, then let's figure those out and let's codify them and say, as long as you met these 3 things, you're good to go. So you're passing your classes, you don't have any unexcused absences, you know, whatever you want to do, these are the criteria, and that can happen in the attendance office. It doesn't need a principal approval. Like, some people don't want to call the principal, like, but they just want to say, like, Johnny needs a mental health day today, and I don't want to get approval for it. Like, I don't want to tell anybody why. I just want everything to be okay.
So you're like, saying then, like, quantify it, have a, you know, the quantify it, and then maybe the last would be to say, if you don't meet this criteria,
then you have to get a
Yeah, it's an excuse.
Unfortunately, and Jay and I have talked about this, state law is exceptionally clear. That's a principal discretion because, and you won't hear me say this very long, but I think there was some, very often, there was some wisdom when that law was passed by our legislature. That's the part you don't always hear me say. Because I can't sit here and go through all the scenarios with all of our kids from K through 12. I can go through a lot of them because they're the ones that hit, you know, our desk. But the principal definitely has some discretion. I think, however, the board does have responsibilities as well through the policy, through the state board policy and the regs, which is to give some guardrails, which we do with the excused and the unexcused. I don't think we will ever be able to take out totally the discretion so that every parent's going to know every time what's excused or not excused. Which is why Jay, and like Jay said, we've had this conversation countless times. The piece he has proposed is within the board's authority legally. I think our question is that the best for all of our families? So kind of that's why we're here. And, right. I mean, luckily we're at first reading because I think we're all, you know, this is one of those things we're going to get a lot of, I think you're going to get a lot of feedback from parents once they realize we're making changes to the attendance policy. And to be exceptionally clear, this would be for next school year.
Right.
Nothing would happen until next school year.
And the discretion and individual conversation, to use that point of passing classes, so it may be perfectly reasonable for Sheila to come in. She's missed a lot of class, to come in and be back on track and passing her classes before that trip. But Dan struggles, and I know that he struggles. And we talk about his IEP, and we talk about the things that he's facing currently. It may not be reasonable for Dan to get to the point of passing those classes before this trip happens, but what he's going to gain from that trip is going to far exceed, like, for him, be all that he needs to kind of get the momentum to come back from that trip and do pour into those classes and get it. So that, it feels harsh that it's individual discretion, but it's on purpose, because what I want, the conversation I want to have with Sheila before she's gone for an extended time may be different than the conversation we have about Dan. And having that principal discretion allows for those thousands of individual unique differences to be at the table when we get that plan together of Sheila's going to be easy to catch up. Dan may need some extra help. So let's go ahead and kind of front load some things before the trip happens. And let's kind of get him caught up a little bit or ahead of the game before he even leaves.
Kind of like how we feel about the retention. Yeah. Look at the individual.
Good job, Sheila.
Dana Josh has a question.
Excuse me. I guess one observation is that I think this a little bit runs the risk of getting into the letter of the law versus the spirit of the law on a little bit. I mean, the letter of the law is one thing about the number of absences, whether that be by law or by policy or by administrative protocol. But I guess I wonder how many times, I'm sympathetic to what Jay's saying about how many times a principal is ever actually denying a request. Because if in practice the request isn't being denied anyway, does it just take a step out of the process and simplify it and make things more efficient if we just acknowledge that and just almost assume that it's a given? And then once it becomes problematic over five, if that's the number, then you start having those conversations with someone who is abusing the system.
I also wonder if you could add a word, if we made it non-consecutive absences, where if it's just that situation where my kid doesn't feel good, but I really don't want to go to the doctor's office and have to get a note and pay my deductible and all that stuff. Like, I hear a lot of parents saying, like, I knew I needed, it was the right thing to do to keep them home, but I didn't want to have, you know, to go through all that.
Like
so,
the mental health days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if it was like non-consecutive, 5 non-consecutive absences, and they don't have any other unexcused.
But it could be. It could be a family. It could be 5 days of a family
true,
trip that
true.
Doesn't fall
within.
That
would
so,
our competition is 2 days.
If we
right.
add this, right? The blue part.
And by the way, to that point, the blue part actually just reflects Tennessee law. We're recommending to add that in for some clarity because a lot of folks didn't know that part of it.
So I guess my point would be, in support of what Jay's suggesting, and in the spirit of that, is that, and maybe I should ask the question. I mean, as a percentage, no way for you to know exactly, but as a percentage, how many times when a parent comes and asks for that absence to be excused and gives the reason for it, is it actually being denied?
I don't know that it's happening a lot that it's being denied. It's the conversation about what to do about the absence, how to prepare for it, what to do in response for it, or maybe put some motivation in place for the student to stay on track academically. It's the conversation, I think, that's more valuable than the concreteness of is this going to be an excused or an unexcused absence. But it certainly is a motivational factor for kids, you know, especially seniors, because yeah. unexcused absences mean I'm not going to be exempt from my exam. But it's I don't want to lose the conversation piece, which the current practice and policy forces that communication to take place.
So, Josh, to answer your question, I can't tell you. With competition cheer this year in February, every single student was approved as discretionary. But there may be some, if somebody's doing something, you know, every Friday for 3 months, that may not happen.
The iniquity here comes when you're talking about total absences versus looking at it my way. The iniquity, it comes solely based on which activities you do. So if you do a varsity sport that's absent all the time, and it's absent often, and it's a field trip, and all of your absences don't even count as absences. Then if you want to get, then you still have all 8 of your absences or all 10 maybe in next year to do whatever you want to, whenever you want to, no questions asked. But somebody, if you're swimming and you've had half of your absences or, you know, 4 or 5 of them that are gone before you ever start because you know you're going in February and April, like every year, then because of the nature of your activity, you have to ask permission to do something that somebody else gets to do for free. This way, everybody gets 5. Like, no questions asked. Like, it's really fair, and it's unfair, and it relates to the other policy that it's not on there this month, but maybe around let's treat our club sport athletes the same as we do everybody else, and this is one of the ways to do it.
Well, that's been a concern of mine. And you and I have had some discussions, many of us have. These are always examples, anecdotes, right? Elizabethton Public Schools, small city school district in East Tennessee, sponsors swimming. So their students, it's a field trip. The law does not allow us to count somebody as attending school if it's not a school activity. So lacrosse this year is not a school activity, but TSSAA is adopting it next year, so it will become a school activity, and they'll get field trips. So we've struggled with that, especially for those students who are emotionally committed to perfect attendance for years. So that's a chunk of it too that really isn't addressed in this. That's we've been having many discussions over.
And for those TSSAA sports, we field trip if they make it to the state tournament. The other events during the academic year or after school, occasionally there is a special request if there is like a national level competition that a TSSAA sport wants to go to, then they can ask for a special permission to leave on a Friday as an example to go do that. But typically a TSSAA sport only field trips on a state tournament.
Well, and in that case, the entire school gets out on a field trip, not just the... So basically, if if volleyball goes to the state tournament, the entire school gets out, you want to go to a swim state tournament, and you've got to take an absence. If anybody wants to go to watch you, then they'll probably get approved, but, like, nobody's going to go. So nobody wants to go.
It's got tight quarters in that little school.
So if I can jump in, it was brought up that we would maybe add a qualifier into this, or more than one possibly. But, I mean, what do you guys think, Lee, about, and Jason, about that, as far as if you say add it on to the end, it has no unexcused absences, and is current, I'm making this up on the fly, and is current on all of their academic requirements.
My only concern about the qualifiers is that every kid's situation is different. Yeah. And that example that I gave right here, yeah, that a qualifier may exclude Dan, but he's doing everything in his power and actually has made great progress, but he's not current, or he might be failing a couple classes. But man, that trip is going to motivate him, and let's work with Dan and use it as a motivational factor to get him a little bit of extra motivation to get over the hump. And I worry that a qualifier, and policy especially, takes that discretion away from a principal.
The qualifier also, potentially, depending on what they are, creates some logistical challenges, because even just thinking about, like, when the trips happen, we've talked a little bit about those timelines. Am I saying that the principal will approve it based on the grade they have at that time, which they might be asking if it's a cheer competition, they already know months in advance when that national trip's going to be, or am I doing it in the moment? So then we find ourselves in a position that I approved it because for the planning purposes that you spoke of, and we know it's there, but then even Sheila's not passing the classes in that moment. And so are we removing that approval because that qualifier is no longer
in the positive? It might be looked at favoritism, mm-hmm, if you're not careful.
Correct.
For sure. Sheila really challenged herself. She took all APs this year.
That's
it was
right.
A big risk, and mm-hmm, she's struggling in one of them, but we're coaching her through it. But the qualifier means she's unexcused.
That's right.
you mentioned before about the state law mentions principal discretion.
Mm-hmm.
What does it say, maybe not word for word, but just generally, what does it say about that? And then what discretion does it give boards on how to apply that?
So there's three different areas that I'm looking at. The piece that sets out in statute the discretion is in your policy almost verbatim on page 4. And I know you weren't here when I said that.
Okay.
So that's your non-school sponsored extracurricular activity that gives the principal discretion of when they may or may not excuse and sets, this is all statute.
So what's in blue comes from the statute?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
There is also school attendance policy, which is State Board of Education policy, and regs for the state board. So that also sets out the board, that's where I'm getting the board's authority on what you are responsible for setting as far as policy is concerned. Some of that is set in stone, for instance. We cannot punish a child for being absent or not allowing them to make up their work. There are also some circumstances, like we would have to allow a child to be absent for religious activities. So some of that is in there. And then some of it, what y'all have, what you're charged with, is creating a fair, and to Sheila's point, equitable policy that goes across those lines, as well as the tiered piece for compulsory attendance. I'm saying compensatory. Mm-hmm. Compulsory attendance. That part we're not touching. So it really is excused versus unexcused, guardrails. Our current policy is consistent with those guardrails. Legally, Jay's addition is consistent with that guardrail. I think it's really the decision of how we want to look at it moving forward, the 5 days versus the 8 or the 10 days. And I think probably, I guess here's my recommendation. What I'd like to do, because we're at 5:35, is keep this moving forward this is first reading. Keep the language in there that Jay has, that we've got. And let's keep talking about it. Because I don't think we've, I think we have answered, we've had a great discussion. We've answered some questions. And then I think administratively we can go back and see. Because like I said, and I think you missed this too, Josh. At the beginning I said we don't have a recommendation on that red language yet. Staff doesn't.
Right.
We know how we've been doing it. But now that we've got some answers, if y'all don't mind letting us look, and then
That's fine.
Be able to either tweak it or,
okay.
You know.
So to be clear, I think this is what you said, but
sure.
The five that's referred to in red is part of the 10 that's in blue.
No.
They're separate.
They would be. So we're talking about potential. If this were to be passed, it'd be potentially 15 days.
Potentially.
Okay.
So, for clarity's purposes, I want to talk about our practice and then what Jay's asking for to make sure we all are on the same page. And as I understand it, right now our practice is parents can give us a note for the first 8 days of an absence, and after that you have to have a note, either a doctor's note or a religious note or something, you know, related to a family death, et cetera, some other documentation after those 8 days. What Jay is proposing is 5 days that aren't stacked on the front end, but parents could say, for example, my child is sick on August 30th, so I have a doctor's note for that, and I haven't used any of my parent note days.
I can use
my parent note days at any time during the course of the year. That's really the distinction of what you're saying.
It's to take out the timing difference between how the same absences are treated in the spring and the fall.
Yeah. And by the way, we have already talked administratively about changing those 8 days.
To 10.
The 8 days were created when chronic absenteeism went into place. It's 10% of the year. And 8 days, it's halfway there to chronic. Just so you know, that's what triggered the 8 days. Because actually for us, it's 17 days is a marks chronic. That's a consequence for the schools.
But chronic, just to be clear, chronic includes all absences, regardless of
reason.
Even if they were all excused, if you miss 3 weeks because of mono, then you're pushing chronic absenteeism. And thank you, by the way, for not sending out nastygrams on chronic absentees anymore. Like that didn't go over well.
What is this letter?
I was like, yeah.
You remember 7-8 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Can I ask a follow-up question? Just triggered something in my mind before we move on. So, Jay, in your mind, what you're hearing from people is the problem that we're trying to overcome. Do you feel like people are being marked absent, or excuse me, unexcused, and their appeals are being denied?
No.
Or it's more just about the ease of using the days?
It's more. Like, we're setting up these administrative hurdles for something that effectively is going to happen, and it just creates uncertainty.
Okay.
So, and it's more a lot of it deals with the activities that you're in, and if you've eaten up your days or not, and all of a sudden, like, I've got somebody who plays football or does something else who they never have to miss there because of their activity. And come springtime, they don't feel like, I mean, they've still got a few absences left for parent notes, so they're taking a couple of free days, right? Whereas if your particular sport requires you to be out a couple of days, then you have less of that to deal with, maybe none of it if you add on an illness. But at the same time, nobody's getting, like, to your point, Jason. Nobody's not. I mean, they wait till the last minute to approve the cheer competition because they don't know if they need to approve days over 8 or under 8. Like, it's frankly dumb that we're. I mean, like, they're approved. Like just say it. They're approved. And like, why are we having to account for the number of days? Like, it's just it is an administrative burden. I'll talk about like all the things that we want to pull off teachers and principals included. Like, this is just one of them. Like, just hand it to the attendance secretary and be done.
I my understanding of one of the reasons the principals wait is, it's, and I don't know that it's been officially at 7 days, but that principle applies. of, well, if I'm getting a request in November because they know they're headed out in, you know, in late February, I'm nervous about saying yes because I don't know what's going to happen in between. And so that's what I suspect based on some of my conversations with principals. And that's something we'll need to work through as well.
Are you saying that the principals are waiting until the last minute to give approval?
In some cases, yes. Yeah,
that has happened.
They don't know how many absences they're going to have, yeah. So they do so the wait.
Well, we all agree that the kids need and parents need to be held accountable for how many days that their kids are missing, right?
That's right.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, and this, I mean, this goes right in line with, I mean, I'd like to try it back to the strategic plan, but, I mean, we did recognize that students who are in activities perform better, and so our goal is to get students, more and more students involved. I think we're pretty high already. You probably have the numbers, but like this is, if you look at our chronic absenteeism versus Metro Nashville's chronic absenteeism, they're going to have the same high achieving students that we do that are missing because of activities, and then they're going to have this bigger band of people who are missing because of not so great reasons. And we have those too, I'm sure. It's just not the numbers.
By the way, I've got to do this shout out to Judge Guffey, our juvenile judge. In that context, almost every single time when a student was coming for either a truancy issue status offense or something that would have been a crime for an adult, she'll ask, "Do you participate in extracurricular activities at school?" And most of the time, the ones who are in trouble say no. And she puts in the order, you must participate in an extracurricular activity.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is we're going to leave it as is for now, keep going, first reading, and then keep discussing it.
Okay.
Awesome. All right. Jen, I just have taken over like it's my meeting.
I don't even know where we are. We go back.
Uh-huh. Yes. We go back to report cards and grading systems. No changes since we talked about this at the board meeting. And Lee, I know, has some information to share with the group.
I do. So after our last meeting, we reached out to principals, counselors, and teachers of those middle school, the teachers who are currently teaching the course and teachers who taught the course previously when the students would have been in middle school taking those courses, just to gather feedback about the topic in general. We reached out to the 23 most highly attended universities that our students attend, just to garner their feedback as well. So ultimately, what our teachers and counselors told us and our principals told us is that they have concerns about making any kind of transcript change, transcript note, because of those same pieces that we talked about previously, that the course itself was advertised, it was taught as a pass-fail course, it was reported to the state as a pass-fail course. Their feeling is still even a transcript note is misleading. That transcript note has a numeric grade or a letter grade since that course itself was taught as a pass-fail. We had at least one teacher who shared with us that she did teach the class differently, knowing that it was a pass-fail, and she teaches it differently now as a graded course. So we want to be super cautious about what we put on the transcript, knowing that it's a historical record. We want it to be accurate. We have a stellar reputation as an academic institution. We want to keep that and ensure that our academic transcripts are a true reflection of what's currently taking place and what did take place. What is our practice is that if we have a major change that happens, and the one that happens most frequently is the grading scale change. We had a grading scale change at the state level recently. When a transcript is sent to a university, the university also receives our school profile. And that school profile, it has all the uniqueness of an individual school. So as an example, a super high-performing school with high ACT, a high number of AP, IB courses that they're offering, like that rigor, when you look at the transcript, you see courses and you see the GPAs that students are getting. But when you read the school profile, you understand more about that GPA, you know, 4.0
at a school with a stellar profile feels super strong. It adds consistency and validity to the rigor that that student is experiencing. So that the school profile goes along with it. When we have a change, such as the grading scale change that happens, we note that in the school profile. So currently, our current seniors, they have one GPA for some of their years of high school and a grading scale and a different grading scale for their earlier years of high school. That's articulated in there in our school profile when a university receives it. Ultimately, our recommendation after hearing the feedback is that we give a description of those middle school courses in our school profile and articulate that they were taught at a pass-fail and that we have made a change, and moving forward, students will be taught that course on a numeric, on a letter grade system, but it was taught at that. Students who are wishing to make an academic appeal, as an example, maybe they didn't have the GPA that they hoped to have when they went into college, they could take that school profile, they could take their middle school report card, and they could make an academic appeal and say, this is what I did in middle school. I made this grade. If you're barely cutting me off, will you take into consideration in this academic appeal with this school profile and my middle school report card? And they can stage that appeal based on that fact. But changing the facts that are portrayed on our actual transcript by putting a letter grade or a numeric grade when that's not the grading scale that was in place when they earned that grade just feels like not being transparent about what the students actually did. So we have reached out to, we're starting now to reach back out to those universities if we move forward with this to say, hey, in an academic appeal, would you take that in consideration for an academic appeal? So we'll reach back out to those 23 universities and see. But we all know that kids make academic appeals for all sorts of reasons. Maybe they were a student who was out on medical for a medical situation and missed a whole semester, or maybe they feel like, you know, their teacher was on maternity leave for a whole semester and that affected them in some kind of way. There are all kinds of unique things that happen that make those grades what they are on the transcript, but we feel like doing any kind of change to what's actually on the transcript other than what actually happened historically would not be a good move for the district. So ultimately, our recommendation is to make that change to the school profile and allow students to make an academic appeal to a university if they feel like they need one.
So I'll just make one comment since I requested it. I want to do some more thinking about it. I mean, I'm fine with putting this in the parking lot for the time being because I want to process what you just said and kind of think about different ways to tackle this. But I appreciate the thought you guys put into it and the time.
In the meantime,
we're going to reach back out. And if this is a administrative change you guys have interest in, which I feel like we should do, even if no policy change happens, I feel like administratively, after this review and all the conversations that have taken place, that's the fair thing to do. Mm-hmm. Because it's consistent with other things that we've done that, as an example, the grading scale changes. Mm-hmm. It's part of our profile. We'll go ahead and follow through with that request to those universities.
And just as a reminder, we're talking about two grade levels right now, our current sophomores and our current juniors for applications, right? Because we already made that change.
What I know from our state universities is that for GPA calculations, they want to see a grade on the transcript. They want to see that grade for their GPA calculations. And a lot of universities will go back and recalculate the GPA on their own scale. And so that was pretty heavily all throughout the communications that we have. They want to see it on the transcript that we're taking it into consideration if we expect the university to take it into consideration. So I do feel like I anticipate the feedback we get from the universities is that it would be on an appeal, individual case appeal only, not on their widespread consideration. I'm anticipating that.
Because it wasn't a consideration of ours when it happened.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's consistent.
Sorry.
I was just going to say it's consistent with, once we start talking about this again, it's consistent with our practices. You're going to see, because I think we change it just about every year, report cards and grading systems, you're going to see changes coming from the State Board of Education. They've done the first reading, second reading's coming up, so this policy will change, and we'll do the same thing. Mm-hmm. We'll go to that profile so that we kind of level the playing field and they can understand what everything on the transcript means. So I liked.
Two things happened as a result of this review. I think it was super healthy. First of all, even if we don't make any changes at all, it was a super healthy review. Number one, it affirmed we made the right decision by teaching this class differently to middle school students. With the feedback that we received and a deep dive into how kids are perform in those middle school courses, in generally speaking, it affirmed like, that was a good move. I feel super great about that. And it was just it's been a very healthy conversation to review our transcript in general and dive deep into these conversations with our counselors, our principals, the teachers of these middle school courses, and to re-examine that school profile. Because it is our opportunity to really showcase the rigor and the excellence that exists in our county that may not exist in every single school across the country or school district across the country. And it gives us that opportunity to really examine that again more closely to make sure we're, you know, doing the best we can always to showcase what our students are doing every day.
So will we be taking that one off the agenda for first reading today?
We can. The executive committee can decide not to put it on the board meeting, which you seem fine with.
Yeah, I mean, because we're kind of now out of cycle for the applications to college anyway. So I think we've got time to
do
it. So we'll do that when we get it this afternoon.
Great.